Hello and welcome to today's episode. Today I'm here with Richard Dixie, and we're going to talk all about learn how to meditate in 3 minutes a day. I'm very excited to dive into this today. You are listening to Creating Wellness from Within, a podcast devoted to helping you live your best life through self-care and wellness. In each episode, we strive to offer you actionable advice and tools to help you on your wellness journey towards greater personal health. I am your host, Amy Zellmer, and I am editor-in-chief of Midwest Yoga and Life magazine and the author of the Chair Yoga Pocket Guide. I am passionate about yoga, wellness, photography, travel, and all things glittery. You can learn more about me at creatingwellnessfromwithin.com. Today's guest is Richard Dixie, and he is the author of 3 Minutes a Day, a 14-week course to learn meditation and transform your life. He is also a senior faculty member at Dharma College in Berkeley, California. He is a research scientist and a lifelong student of Buddhism, and holds advanced degrees in biophysics and the history and philosophy of science. He directed a bioelectronic research unit at a London hospital before coming CEO of his own biotech company. Welcome to the podcast, Richard. So happy to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm just really excited to dive into this topic today because, you know, I think there's so much resistance around meditation, right? There's, oh, I don't have time, or I can't quiet my mind, which is the exact reason why we meditate, is to learn how to quiet the mind. So I'm really excited to dive into this. And, you know, I think by saying 3 minutes a day, right, like that makes it a little bite size, easy to chew, you know, process versus thinking you have to sit down for 30 minutes to meditate.
So, you know, we ought to talk about why that is and where this idea has come from.
Yes. Yeah. Go ahead. Let's dive in.
All right. So simple enough. Meditation is about addressing our actual experience. Now, all contemporary people who have had a modern education are told there's a real world out there that we learn about through science and stuff, and we look at that world. Actually, that's a complete misunderstanding. The only experience we ever have and ever can have are our five senses and our thoughts and imaginations, famous six gates. That is all we ever experience, ever, that's it, finish. And meditation is about learning about that. Now, we're not taught it in school. It should be taught. Reading, writing, and meditation would be the perfect thing
right.
to teach primary school kids, right? And it's not to be calm. It is to understand what we are actually receiving, from which we make a map of the world, which we call the world and then say is real. But actually, it's a map. It's not real. It's a map. Now, of course, it conforms to reality, but it contains opinions, it contains judgments, it contains things you like, things you don't like, things you got to do, things you haven't got to do. Ah! All this stuff is in the map.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation is about looking at the map, seeing it as a map, and therefore having some freedom from obsessive mapping. Now, obsessive mapping is probably better put as reflexive reactivity. We're reacting the whole time to things, because our map says that's important, that's to be avoided, that's to be got, that's to be avoided. And this pulling around is getting worse and worse and worse, because modern technology is very sophisticated at getting at the things that you react to. It is designed to make you react.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is an epidemic of stress and a feeling of being out of control is really growing, and it's getting worse and worse. And ChatGPT and all this clever artificial intelligence can make it even worse. And unless we start seeing the map as a map, we'll never get control of it. Now, this is a really, really simple idea. Unfortunately, meditation is normally taught as if all you have to do is calm down. The problem with that is calm down. If you don't understand why you're reacting, if you don't have that basic insight, all you can do to calm down is close your eyes, sit in a little box, try to not have any disturbance. A lot of people think meditation is about having no thoughts, for example, which is utterly nonsense. Nothing to do with that at all. And so what happened at Dharma College is, you know, we have this mission at Dharma College to try and take the ancient wisdom traditions and express them in modern language. And I began teaching meditation as part of this process. And I realized really, you could get it down really short when you were really clear about what you're trying to do. So this book is really simple. The deal is I tell you exactly why I want you to do whatever it is. And then you do it for 3 minutes a day. At the end of a week, there's another thing. Do that 3 minutes a day. Now, the reason for this is to do with words. Now, words are part of the map. So when I say, here is a cup, I give you a cup. You can see it. So, you know, when I use the word cup, I'm talking about something like that. However, if I say, I want to tell you about calmness, there's nothing to show you. How do we, what do you mean right. calm? And so the problem is that. Now, if I was to say to you, I want to tell you about chocolate. It's sweet. It's a bit sticky. Melts in your mouth. It's brown. It's a bit oily. It's lovely to taste. Nothing I can say to you will tell you what chocolate is. I have to give you a piece of chocolate. And then you taste it. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, that's chocolate. Well, that's exactly what this book is trying to do. It's trying to give specific insights so we can get to grips with our reflexive reactivity, our reflexive map making, which is what we actually experience all the time. Now, the thing is, to do this, we have to learn how to become less reactive. And the key to that is to understand concentration. And now this, again, is where there's a lot of confusion in meditation. We've all been taught to concentrate. Contemporary culture is about concentration. So just concentrate, concentrate. This idea of adverting, the proper term, adverting attention to a chosen object is the first phase of concentration. The problem is it's brittle. That's to say, if you merely advert your attention to a chosen object, a sound happens, thought comes, and immediately you've adverted to that. And so you're being pulled around. That's where the word advertising comes from. Advertising is designed to advert your attention to what you're trying to sell you. So actually, and this is where the meditation traditions are incredibly helpful, there are in fact two phases to concentration. And the first step in meditation is learning the difference. The first one is adverting. That's what we call concentration. The second one is savoring. When you have adverted, you stay with the object and experience it. That's also concentration, savoring. Now, savoring is quite different from adverting. Savoring is when you stay with a moving object that may change in time, but you're on it. You're with it. You're like dancing with it. Now, that capacity to stay with a moving object is not brittle. It's stable. When other things come, they don't disturb you in the same way because the concentration isn't focused like that. It's going with the experience. Now, this separation between these two phases of concentration is the key to developing a calm state. Now, a calm state is a state where you're not reacting. You are literally engaging with experience. So instead of being bouncing off experience with immediate judgment, which is what our map making does, what we do is we move with experience. And as a result, we become calmer and clearer. Now, this is really, really simple. If you have a glass of water with a bit of dust in it or mud in it or something, and it's always being shaken like this, it's going to be muddy. You're not going to be able to see clearly. As you get less reactive and more responsive, so the water settles and suddenly you see clearly. Now, the term for seeing clearly in the old language is vipassana. Passana means seeing and v means clear or discriminating. So when you're calm, you get vipassana. which means you suddenly, oh, I see what that is. Oh, I understand what's happening now. You're suddenly able to get control of your life at a very fundamental level. As I say, it's the level of reading and writing. This is not complicated. The problem is the meditation traditions that we have received were developed by monks, nuns, full-time religious workers. It was their day job. So not surprisingly, they say, oh, meditate for an hour, you know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What else have I got to do? And of course, in modernity, that's extremely challenging. And so what I've realized, and indeed this comes from my background too, because I've been exposed to traditions where this is stressed, is to do short periods well rather than long periods bad. And the problem is if you are obligated to sit for half an hour without understanding really what you're doing, the chances are you'll just sleep on your cushion or you'll daydream on your cushion. It's just pointless. The key is to get clarity as to what you're trying to achieve, do it well for a short period, and then get on with your day. Mm-hmm. And what will happen if you accumulate 3 minutes a day for 14 weeks through a series of these meditation exercises is by the end of it, you will know what meditation is, just like you will know what chocolate is if I gave you a piece. You can then say, okay, this made my life more interesting, I'm more creative, etc. That's fine. That's all I ever wanted. Or you might think, no, I really do want to go on now and meditate for longer periods. That's great too. Or you might think, no, I just want to diarize and just have a more interesting time. That's fine. There's really no obligation to develop meditation into 8 hours a day, whatever. There's no requirement for that. Meditation is a basic life skill, like playing the violin, whatever, driving. It's just one of those things we should all know how to do. Now, the key to it is there's another very important point. Because we reflect the map we make of the world as the world, our view of the world is colored by our opinions. Consequently, we can disagree with one another quite deeply. Because the world I see and the world you see are colored differently. Now, that means we start going, oh, you're lying, or you know, whatever, get into terrible fights. Most of the political problems that exist in the world today are coming from that.
Yeah.
And if only people could see they have a worldview that they are making that comes from their education and their background and all the experiences that happened to them, if only they could see that, then they could sit down together and say, okay, let's negotiate rather than fight. And this, again, is a profound problem in modernity. We have runaway climate change, tremendous social change, technological change, political change, and people are trying to deal with it without understanding map making. And this is really scary, Mary. This is a very dangerous situation. Because if we don't get to grips with how we make the world for real, if we don't get to grips with this, it is a very dangerous world. So the Asian traditions have come just at the right time. These are unbroken lineages that go back thousands of years, and they were developed by people who were interested in perception, what they actually do when they see, hear, feel, etc., what actually happens. And so meditation is that skill. It's that basic. And I hope very much that people who take this book, and by the way, it has a free app that comes with it, so you can stick it on your mobile phone and do these very simple meditations. My hope is that people who take this book will just try meditation. As you might say, learn how to make a cup of coffee. It is not more complicated than that. And there's no mystical, complicated backdrop to it either. This is not an introduction to some complicated new way of seeing the world. It is merely accepting actuality about which no one can actually argue. Namely, all we actually experience are our five senses, thoughts, and imaginations. There is no other experience. Yet we are never in school told this. We're never educated about it. And as a result, we have to make it up as we go along. And many of us get it wrong, not surprisingly. And so meditation is just that basic skill. No, that's my sermon.
I'm trying to think of where to start unpacking this, because that was just a lot of great information you just gave us. And you know, let's start with just the whole like meditation. Because like I said, people have an aversion to meditation because they're like, oh, I can't quiet my mind. It's like that, it doesn't work. You know, I have ADD, I can't do it. Well, but that's the whole point of meditation, is to help us learn how to quiet some of those thoughts. And I believe we have something like 60,000 thoughts a day. And probably more. And when we meditate, our goal is to get that down to just like a couple thoughts a minute.
No, right? Listen, no, you're just repeating something that's not true. Honestly, that isn't. That's not okay. What meditation is. I want to correct you here.
Yeah, please do.
Okay. The problem is reactivity. Now, thoughts are a natural function of our cognitive apparatus. And let's talk about this map making, because I think this map making is a real key. What is map making? Okay, human beings were being chased around by saber-toothed tigers on the plains of the Serengeti. We got down, apparently, to 12 families about 50,000 years ago. And if you're reading this, absolutely incredible. We almost became extinct. What enabled us to now be dominant in the world? It was map making. We, as a part for every other animal, have an extraordinary capacity to learn from experience. Now, what does that mean? It means when something happens to us, we remember it, and we can map whether we should do it this way or that way when it comes again. In fact, a lot of dreaming at night is improving the map. This map making is protective. It's designed to make the best of our experience. It's not designed to make us happy. It's designed to keep us alive and give us a long life if possible. That's all. It's not designed to do anything else. Now, map making is continuous. Thoughts are map making. They're all about, oh, I should do that. Or maybe I should do this. Or maybe I should have all this talk. It's all part of the equipment. The problem is it's our reactivity.
Yes.
To the map that is the problem. And when people say, oh, I can't meditate, what they mean is they can advert, but then they get pulled around. They have to learn to savor. Now, when you savor, the number of thoughts doesn't stop. Not at all. It's just that you're no longer reacting to them. They're clouds in the sky. They come and go. Things happen. And indeed, you can use your thoughts as an advisor. So instead of being obligated to act on whatever you've reacted to, which is how we normally are, you can be stable and you can go, oh, that's an interesting idea. Or maybe I should do that. And suddenly you have the freedom of choice. And that's the great benefit. The thoughts will continue. They are not an enemy and they're not a problem. Now, obsessive thinking is merely the consequence of reactivity. As we react and get more and more shaken up, so the map maker's going, what's wrong? I want to do, must be this. It's trying desperately to find out what is wrong with the way we're reacting. As you get less reactive, it calms down. There's still going to be thoughts because the map maker is still going, oh, you might do this or you might do that. Or that is nice or that is not. But it's now an advisor to you rather than a jailer. And honestly, most of us are in a prison of our own making. The map maker is literally locking us up. And the problem, of course, here is because the map maker is based in the past, because it's mapping from what happened before, our behavior becomes circular. We repeat again and again the same behavior patterns. And this is really, if you look at human history, you see it going round and round and round and round in circles because we're not moving forward in the way you might expect. I mean, you can read the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor in 150 AD, and you get exactly a guy you could meet today. It is just the same problems. And this is because we are trapped. And this idea of being trapped is really, really important to understand. And, you know, there's a very interesting mistranslation, I think. There's a key word that now is everywhere in our culture, nirvana. And the idea of nirvana, it comes from your Buddha. He achieved nirvana. People always think nirvana is some kind of blowing out. into nothing. Somehow he became nothing. That's actually a mistranslation. Avana is a prison, and nirvana is to be free of prison. What is the prison? This is the prison, this map maker that's continuously trapping us, entangling us in ideas. And meditation is a way of becoming free of prison. And people, when they do this, other folks say to them, oh, you've become kinder. You've become more calm. You're less reactive. And indeed, they start saying you've become wise. Now, all a wise person is a person who doesn't react to the first impression, who assesses what's happening, and then makes a judgment call. They are just very wise. But that ability comes directly from not reacting and engaging. And that's the fundamental skill that a meditation practice gives you.
So would this be similar? So I've always been taught when meditating, thoughts are still going to come into our mind, and it's what we do with them, right? Like what you're saying, reaction. And if unwanted thoughts arise, simply release them without judgment, without labeling them good, bad, right, wrong. So does that seem to be in alignment with what you're saying?
Yeah, well, actually, thoughts are not our enemy.
Right. That's what we do with them.
Yeah, so people say, oh, my thoughts are such a problem. Honestly, give me a thought that stays more than this long. They just come and go on their own like this.
Well, some can.
No, honestly.
Some people can start ruminating.
Anybody who can hold a thought for more than a few minutes is some sort of yogi, honestly. It's very hard because they just keep coming and going like this. It's our reactivity. That's the enemy. The problem is our reactivity, not the thoughts. Just like our sense inputs are not a problem. It's our reactivity to our sense inputs that's the problem. The fundamental problem is reactivity. Now, reactivity is protective. And the protection that the map maker gives us, as I say, is fundamental to us as a human species. But it is paranoid. It's always looking for trouble. That's why all news is bad news. That is not the consequence of newspaper owners. All news has always been bad news because the map maker is only interested in bad news. Honestly, I will read an article about, I don't know, a rainstorm in Alabama with great interest. But if I was to read an article about how well it's going for my next door neighbor, I'd think, good for him. Who cares? Let's go back to this problem. I'm only interested in bad news. And this, again, is not because there's some evil empire here. It's because the map maker is protective. Actually, I really think the map maker is like a maiden aunt. It's like a maiden aunt who says, oh, you shouldn't go out at night. You might get mugged. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. It's kind of overprotective. It's always trying to stop us from doing this. Don't make mistakes. And this obsessive reactivity becomes more and more problematic the older you get. So, a 17-year-old looking out the window, the world is their oyster, the map is not yet closed up. 77-year-old looking out the same, I've only got a little thing to see now because everything's no
way. Right.
That's what happened. We're in a Varna. We're in a prison. We need to go to a Nirvana, get free of the prison. It's that simple. It really is.
Is that why they're called grumpy old men? Well, Richard, thank you so much. This has been a really wonderful conversation. And I hope everyone does get your book along with that app. I think that's such a beautiful combination, especially with what you're trying to do within the book, getting them to do an activity every day for 14 weeks. So I want to make sure we take some time to mention your website. It's richarddixie.com. And wherever you're listening, we have a clickable link for you in the show notes. So tell us a little bit about what they might find on your website and how to find your book.
Yeah, well, as you read out in my CV, I've had an interesting time of life, really. I mean, I'm now, retired, but I'm now teaching full time. And I've had this interesting career of going from being a scientist to being interested in spirituality. And so what you're going to find on my website is a bunch of interviews, and you're also going to find the books I've written. And you're going to find also this kind of idea that modern technology is not a problem. It's our reactivity to modern technology.
Yeah.
And in fact, if we were to become less reactive and more wise, we could enter a golden age, because the technology we now have and are developing is incredible. The problem is, if we react to it, it is going to be destructive. So we're in a kind of bifurcation as a species. And to me, as someone who spent a lot of my life working as a scientist, running a laboratory, and then running a biotech company, I can see the benefits of science. But science will never, ever tell you what it's like to be you. No matter how many neurophysiologists map the brain and tell you this, that, and the other about how the brain works, they'll never tell you what it's like to be you. You need to learn what it's like to be you. Meditation is that skill. Meditation can teach you what it's like to be you. And when you know what it's like to be you, you can use this technology wisely. And that, to me, is the key. We're not trying to unify science with spirituality. That is a totally wrong-headed idea. What we're trying to do is become human beings with technology. And to become a human being means learning what it's like to be you. And of course, you know, with the wonderful yoga practices and tremendous knowledge about diet and all this, meditation comes with that. And it's the fundamental skill, because fundamentally, we need to understand what it's like to be us. And that means, how am I making a world map from my five senses, my thoughts and imaginations? How am I doing that? And learning how to do that, see that, and understand how that's happening must be 101, the basic life skill of being a human being. And I feel quite passionately that this is not complicated. I feel very unhappy by how many people say, oh, I tried it, but I couldn't do it.
Right.
As if it's like climbing the Matterhorn or something, you know, some sort of complicated thing. And it's not. It's really, really simple. And it's just, you've got to understand why. And that's what's totally lacking. Unfortunately, the traditions that have come down to us didn't have the cognitive psychological models that we currently have. And so addressing modern people in modern language is what really is informing this approach. We are map making. We map make because we are thinking apes that came from the savannah. And that's the skill we carry. But it comes at a price. It makes for us a varna, a prison. And when we see that and we understand it, we can achieve nirvana. We can get free of the prison. And that means, as human beings, we can reclaim our humanity. We can reclaim our natural intelligence. We can reclaim our common sense and be commonsensical in the face of this incredible technological progress that is literally overwhelming our political and social systems as it happens. And I think we can. And then what will happen is, as human beings, we will be empowered in a very profound way. And that, to me, is what the ancient traditions are bringing to modernity. They're bringing this, you know, this yeast in the pie to show us how to be fully human. And I don't think there's any conflict here. There's no conflict with religious belief, and there's no conflict with scientific methodology. This is merely a basic life skill. And of course, I feel passionately about it. My whole life has been spent oscillating around these issues. And in the last 10 years or so, I gradually got it in focus, and I understood what the issue was. It's map making. I don't know why it took me my whole life to get there, but I did eventually get there. It's map making. And map making and reflexive map making is both a benefit and a curse. And it's learning how it's a curse and using it for our benefit that's going to give us a better life. It's that.
Richard, thank you so very much for being here today and sharing this wisdom with us. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. please consider leaving a 5-star review wherever you're listening to help others on their wellness journey discover this podcast. And be sure to head to MidwestYogaLife.com and join our email list to stay in the know of local events, upcoming yoga conference, and so much more. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you in the next episode.